All right, so last week we had gotten into chapter 14 into the 15 about the division of the land, especially to the tribe of Judah. And specifically, we find that Caleb, who is a member of the tribe of Judah, had come forward to Joshua and said, "Give me my inheritance." We found that, you know, that he was 85 years old. He had been 40 years old when he had gone in and been one of the 12 spies, and he, along with Joshua, came back with a good report. And because of that, even though the children of Israel were wandering in the wilderness for about 40 years, he was promised an inheritance. And he is going to be one of the two men remaining alive from that group that was over 20 years old that took possession of the land when they crossed the Jordan River and went there. So he was, you know, he was 85, but it says he was as strong as he had been. So here's an older man, 85, and I know as I'm getting older, my strength is not what it was. So it's very impressive that God allowed him to retain that strength that he had even at a younger age, even at 40. Many of you are near 40. You think, "I'm not as strong as I was when I was 20. But there he was, and he had gone in and he had battled. And what was one of the cities, the first city that he was given? City of Hebron. Okay, and so we find that he took that area. That was an area that also had some of the giants there, the sons of Anak, and he defeated them and drove them out. He was also given the city of Debir. And do you recall what he offered for the one who would take the city of Debir, who would defeat it? What did he offer? He offered his oldest daughter. And so here someone comes along. Who comes along and takes him up on that challenge? Who is that? Not his brother. You're close. But it's Othniel. Othniel was the son of Kenaz, who was Caleb's brother. Kenaz was the brother of Caleb. And Othniel was the son of Kenaz. Now, where was Kenaz? He wasn't probably dead. He was among those who wandered in the wilderness and were over 20, along with, you know, Joshua and Caleb, but he followed along evidently with the others, or was condemned to die with them in the wilderness. So he wasn't there, but his son survives. Obviously, he was under that age. And so now he takes up the challenge. What does that tell us about Othniel? Does it tell us anything about him? Can we learn anything about it just from this little short section? I see John over there mouthing something. Yes. It doesn't say it here, but I think we can understand that he had faith in God to be with him, to help him do this. And he took that challenge. And of course, he obviously gained something that was probably important. It was his cousin. Interesting, in that time, that was a little different here. A bit. That's right. He will also find in the book of Judges, he's the first of the judges. And so he was a faithful man of God. And so we can learn a lot from just this short thing about Othniel and taking this land. And then, of course, we know that, you know, she asked, you know, Caleb's daughter asked for, you know, told Othniel, "You need to go ask for this extra land. You know, we'll need it probably." And turns out she ends up going asking her dad about it. You know, she didn't evidently wait on him, but obviously being the father he was and realizing, I guess, the need for that he gave them springs of water so they could have water in a very dry and arid area that this was in. And so they were given that. All right, let's see. Where are we? So at the end of chapter 14, it said the land rested from war. So evidently the main battles, I believe, were done. But yet we're going to find that there's still people occupying areas. And obviously over the time period of probably 4 or 5 or 6 years that they have been especially battling in the north, that The likelihood is some people came back in and reoccupied their cities, or other peoples came and occupied the cities that were already there, so they had to drive them out too. Just as Caleb had to drive the sons of Anak out of Hebron, because they had already, remember, when they had made that little circuit in the southern part of the land and took these six cities pretty quickly over a course of probably several weeks, they had defeated Hebron and they had killed everybody that was there. And so they had obviously come back and gone into there. So let's see, just to give you an idea, of course, there's the outline of the area of control, but here is sort of the area of the 12 tribes as they're going to be allotted. You see Judah down there in the bottom, sort of almost bottom half of the area of Canaan. Pretty large area, right? Pretty large area that they take. And, you know, it stretched, you know, almost the width of, except, you know, really they were given the land all the way to the Mediterranean Sea, but the Philistines were there, and they did not have that area in their possession, obviously, at that time. And so we find that there's one group that was not driven out, it says. And it's interesting because they're not really in a city part of Judah. But what group of people do we recognize here that were not driven out of their city? What's that? Well, no, let's talk about Jerusalem. It's in Jerusalem. What group was that? The Jebusites. And they were allowed to remain there. They weren't driven out. How long was it before the Jebusites, anybody remember, when they were driven out of Jerusalem? Who drove them out? David. So there's hundreds of years that occur that the Jebusites are there among them. And we'll talk about that problem. Well, we'll just go to that question. So we see the Jebusites left there. We'll see other people, the Girgashites, the Bachathites over on the east side of the Jordan. We're going to see other people as we go through here, the Canaanites, as mentioned. Is there a problem here? Does this create a problem? What kind of problem is it? First of all, they didn't do what? They didn't follow God's command to drive them all out, destroy them all. What's another problem? We can talk about several. What's another problem? Intermarrying. God had warned them through Moses. You know, you leave them there, you're going to intermarry, and then, you know, you're going to be corrupted. You're going to, you know, it's going to be a problem for you following God. What else? Drawing them away from God into idolatry. We'll find those things clearly become a problem. And in some cases, rather quickly. Even quickly after they have come into the promised land and God had fulfilled all his promises to them. So, we've got a problem already developing among these children of Israel. Well, let's talk a minute about Hebron, just sort of in a way of history. Here's the land, the area that Judah received. I'm trying to think, Hebron. So here's some things about Hebron. It's an important city. We hear about Hebron all the way back in Genesis 13, 18. This is where the oaks of Mamre are. You remember when Abraham and his whole group came out back out of Egypt, and Lot was with him, and they go to this area, and there's just too many of them, and they decide to split up, and Lot goes and takes the better part, and Abram at that time, he goes to the oaks of Mamre. And that's when God comes to him and talks to him again. And so we see Hebron mentioned this early in the Old Testament. We'll find what is the thing at Hebron? What was bought there? That's right, the cave of Machpelah. It was bought, and most of the patriarchs and their wives were buried there. Genesis 49, Genesis 51, we can read about that. This is a place where the spies had visited. Caleb and Joshua had visited there. And close to here is where they cut these huge clusters of grape that they took back. You know, as a child we see pictures, you know, where they've got this huge cluster of grapes and there's, you know, two guys with a big, you know, log or whatever, and they're hanging from you. We see that. Not sure how big they really were, but talks about them being big, but that's in Numbers 13, we find that there. It's going to become here, we'll study about next week, a city of refuge. And we'll talk about the cities of refuge next week. And then, interesting thing, this is where, before we find out about Samson and Delilah, we find Samson over in the Philistine area, and as he's about to be attacked, I think sort of caught off guard, he picks up this gate of the city of Gaza, and he carries it to the top of the hill across from Hebron. You know, if you look back on a map, that's a pretty decent distance. So we see the strength and power of Samson. We see, again, Hebron mentioned in the Scriptures. And there's other places, but just some interesting things to remind us, because Hebron is pointed out here as the place that Caleb is given inheritance in. And then we'll find, when we talk next week, that actually the Levites end up with that city, though Caleb settles and has the land around Hebron. So let's talk about Caleb. Can we learn some lessons from Caleb? So, you know, he lived 40 years in hope of a promise. And let's turn over to, well, I don't have to turn over, I've actually got up here. You know, when we think about us, can we relate to this promise, this hope that we have, similar to Caleb? I think Jonetta a couple weeks ago came to me and said, you know, it just clicked with her that here the Israelites had this hope of a promised land that God had promised them so far back, and we in the same way have that hope and that promise of salvation, of eternal life, of a place to go to. And again, I think it's important for us to take from this, you know, we might look at sometimes and say, what can we gain from this? Well, we can gain a lot. Let's look at Colossians 3, 1 through 4. If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is, sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For he died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. So can you relate that again to Caleb? We're told to set our minds on things above. He was setting his mind for 40 plus years on a promise that was made to him. We need to set our minds on that promise. Look at, lost it, guys. Well, we lost it. Well, let's look at Ephesians chapter 1. And they'll probably get it up by the time I get this. Ephesians chapter 1, very familiar verse. When we talk about our hope that we have, Ephesians 1, chapter 1, verse 3, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ. So what a hope we have of that spiritual blessing. And of course, we've already received some of those blessings in salvation through his blood. But yet we have that hope of eternal life. And then finally, over in Colossians 1, 27, you don't necessarily have to turn over there, but verse 27, the last part of that verse talks about Christ, the hope of glory. So again, we recognize that hope we have and be like Caleb in that he endured for all that time and overcame that. All right, what about this? Well, guys, I'm stuck again. Any way y'all can advance it? All right. Well, it may be my jump drive. So, what about Caleb and his age? He is an older man. What can we learn about him from an older man and his hope, his endurance? What are some things you can think of we can learn from that? For us, several of us are older. We see the steadfastness of Caleb. Dave? right. So God strengthened Caleb, allowed him to do what he wanted to do and needed to do to gain that. What about, again, it doesn't say this particular, what about his effect on Othniel? And for us who are older, toward those who are younger, what we need to recognize is our effect on those who are growing, younger and growing. What a great example of that. And he, I, just sort of off the cuff here, he challenged some people. He challenged Othniel. And we need to challenge younger people if we're older. And so, great examples from that. Matt? And I think sort of tied into that, I thought about this in studying, I think, last week, the week before. You know, think about, here's Caleb and Joshua. And they had gone 40 years wandering in the wilderness. And what did they see? They saw this person die, and this person die, and these people, and all these people die. Wouldn't that be sort of discouraging if it was you to see all these people? But yet, they remain strong and faithful. You know, Joshua in his role under Moses and Caleb in his role as he went about doing what he was doing, whatever, we don't really see a lot about him after after the spies went in and came out. But yet, what a great thing. And what about this? What about in the world we live in today and the world they lived in, there are so many things that distract us physically. There's obstacles. And I put up there giants. You know, just think about that. Here is Caleb going up against these giants who were fierce warriors. He didn't let that get in the way of his faith in God. He was willing to go and fight against him because he knew God was fighting for him. There was a quote I found in one of the things I was looking at. It says, unbelief looks at giants, faith looks to God. So again, a great encouragement for us that we can learn from Caleb. So, Jimmy. Great point. I've thought about that word perhaps there many times because he doesn't think that, well, God owes me this. He expects it because he was faithful, but it was still in God's hands, right? But we see a humble attitude in him. Chuck? Okay. Yeah. All right. Anybody else? We could probably sit here and talk all morning, and I wouldn't stop anybody if you had another thought about that, but just a great... You know, when we talked about character studies, and we don't have a lot about Caleb. We have enough, though, to see a great man of God, who was doing all he could to be obedient and to follow after him. All right, let's see. We've already talked, had down here, we've already talked about Othniel. So as we move on in chapter 15, we see, beginning of verse 20 through 63, we have a long list of all the cities that are taken, all the cities that are part of that. I counted, sort of a little confusing, either 112 or 114 cities, and the point is, there are a lot of cities in this area, and there's a lot of land, and we'll see some of the tribes here later today. They only got 16, 27, you know, just a few cities, and their area is very small. And so understanding and remembering that while the land was given by Lot, which God was pointing out which tribe went to which land, you remember it was divided. And part of the division was going to be based on what? The size of the tribe. And we have back in, you know, when they were numbered previously in the wilderness, we see the number of people there that are in each tribe. And we see a difference, a disparity in numbers. You know, there's some have more, some have less. And obviously Judah had one of the larger tribes. All right, let's see. So chapter 16 and 17, we go back again to the sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. Remember, half the tribe of Manasseh had settled over on the east side of the Jordan. But yet now, we're going to find that they're given land in the main part of the land that's given. And there's a large area of land inherited by them, obviously relating to the fact that they were together a very large tribe. And so we find there that Ephraim is mentioned first. Why? You remember, again, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Why would Ephraim be mentioned first? Was Ephraim the oldest? No. Why would Ephraim be mentioned first? Remember when Joseph brought his sons to Jacob before Jacob dies, and Jacob puts his hands and he crosses his hands and he puts his right hand on Ephraim, and you know, and this is mainly for those who hadn't been in the class, you know, to remind you of this. But you know, Joseph tried to move his hand, and Jacob said, "No, son, this is what it's supposed to be." And he blesses them, and so Ephraim gets the first blessing, and so he is the one here, I think, that's given. Mentioned first as giving their land. And we find that they weren't able to drive out the Canaanites. And what did they do? How did they deal with the Canaanites? Put them in forced labor. They said, well, you know, if they're here, let's go ahead and use them. We're not going to drive them out. We're not going to kill them all. Let's use them. So they used them for forced labor. Is that what God told them to do? No, he didn't. He told them to drive them out. But yet, they didn't do that. And then you see them, it's interesting, they turned it to their advantage, didn't they? They decide, hey, this is good for us. We'll have slaves to take care of things for us. Let's just go ahead and use them. Again, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it was a way of trying to say, well, this is okay. God will be okay with this. We're making them slaves. And obviously that wouldn't be correct in God's eyes. And of course, they're going to become a bad influence on them. The next, we see the half tribe of Manasseh, who's given land there. Interesting situation. So, as they're given land, who comes to Joshua and demands an inheritance? There's some women. There's 10 daughters of, and I have to look at it because I can't pronounce it anyway. Zelophehad. I can't think it's right. So they come asking for an inheritance. So why would they do that? Why would they be asking for an inheritance? What was the problem? Their father had no sons. And so actually, back in the wilderness, this was addressed in Numbers 27. So Numbers 27, we find that a second census had been taken of the people, and these daughters came to Moses. They said, hey, our father has no sons, you know, why should his descendants have no inheritance? Okay. So what does Moses do? Moses goes and treats the Lord. What does the Lord say? They're right. They should get an inheritance. And a statute, God puts a statute in place to deal with this. And so what do we find? We find that God told them, said, if a man has no sons, his daughters will inherit. But wait a second. There could be a situation where there's no sons or daughters. Who gets it then? Somebody should get that inheritance. So it says it goes to his brothers. And then, wait a second, what if he has no brothers? Or no brothers left? Then it goes to his father. And then if his father's not there, then it would go to his nearest kinsman. And so God deals with that in a way that's just and reasonable. And so now these daughters are coming to Joshua and saying, it's hard to say Jacob, Joseph, Joshua. It's difficult sometimes for me. It comes to him and says, give us our inheritance. We're supposed to get an inheritance. And so we find that he does that. And so that's fulfilled. It's interesting to find as you look through this that there are several cities that Manasseh is given. If you read through it and sort of do a little research, several cities Manasseh is given are from other tribes. For whatever reason, that's the case. They were given some cities from some other tribes. And again, just like their brothers in the tribe of Ephraim, they could not drive all the Canaanites out, and they too put them into slavery to remain among them. But they're not through yet. It seems to me that for whatever reason, these two tribes from Joseph are not satisfied. And they come to Joseph and say, we don't have enough land. You haven't given us enough land. And how does Joseph deal with that? What does he tell them? What does Jacob do with that? See, I did it. What does Joshua initially tell them? He says, go in the mountains, part of your land. You got to clear land, go clear land. I guess they expected to have everything laid out for them, cities to inhabit, all the land ready to cultivate. God didn't tell them that. He told them he'd give them a land of plenty, but he didn't tell them everything would be just perfect like they wanted it. And so Joshua tells them to go do that. But it's interesting when you look at what they said. They come to Joshua and say, well, you gave us only one lot. Really? He separated out into two parts. They say, we're a great people. We need more land. And it seems that they tried to invoke the Lord in this, in doing this. Let's see if I can find what we're looking at. So in verse 14, let's just read through it briefly. Then the children of Joseph spoke to Joshua, saying, why have you not given us but one lot and one portion to inherit, since we are a great people, inasmuch as the Lord has blessed us until now? See, they invoke the name of the Lord in there. Well, you know, come on, Joshua, you should give us more. What are they not remembering? How was this land divided? How was it given to each tribe? By lot? What does that mean? The Lord. So, I think they're sort of walking on dangerous ground here. But yet, Joshua seems to be a smart guy. He says, you know, go and clear out the land. And it says they still complain. They said, but Joshua, the Canaanites are there. They've got chariots of iron. Wait a second. When they defeated the northern part of the land, what did those people have? Chariots of iron and horses. And they defeated them through God's help. And again, I see a lack of faith in God. To give, you know, to provide for them, they were, again, they throw out every excuse that you could think of. And so Joshua just says no. Says he wouldn't relent. He wouldn't let back down. He says no. You need to go clear these mountains and drive out the Canaanites. Even though they have chariots of iron and they're strong. So again, he tries to impress upon them what they need to do. So that gets us through chapter 17. Chapter 18 and 19 deal with the rest of the division or the handing out of the land for as an inheritance. we'll find that there are still, how many tribes left? There's still seven. Seven tribes left that haven't been allotted their land. And so they come to Shiloh, to the tent of meeting. This is where Joshua is. And they gather there. Notice it says here that the land was subdued before them. They technically were in control of the land. Okay? God had given them the land he had promised them. And so now it's time to go do that. And Joshua asked them why they neglected to have the land. It seems that they just wouldn't go. I don't know if they were just staying around Shiloh where the tent of meeting was with Joshua, but they haven't gone out to the lands they've been given. And so Joshua is asking them, why haven't you done that? And so what does Joshua tell them to do? How are they going to go about to determine where they're going? That's right. He says, take three men from each tribe. I take that three times seven. 21 men to go walk through the land. And you're going to go survey it. You're going to see where all the cities are, name all the cities, name all these other things, and come back to me, and then we will deal with this. And so they do that. And they return with a survey, and Joshua cast lots, and the land was divided. And so we'll see that Benjamin is next in order, and among the land he's given is 26 cities. Simeon is after Benjamin. He is within the inheritance of Judah. Obviously, evidently, the land for Judah at the time was a little too much, and they planted, if you remember the map we had up there a minute ago, Judah was sort of was there, sort of the bottom half, and Simeon was in that part. Eventually, Simeon is going to shrink down to little or nothing over time. Then there's Zebulun in the north. Issachar is also in the north. Asher is in the north along the Mediterranean Sea. Then Naphtali is in the north next to Asher, but over toward the Jordan River. And then finally Dan, who is one of the smallest inheritances. And so we'll find that Dan, interesting, we'll talk about this later, or actually it'll be in the book of Judges next time we study that, but we'll see that Dan evidently didn't take their land like they should have or something, but they decided to go north, to the very north part of the area of Canaan, and to fight against the city of Leshem. And they take, it's mentioned here, but I think it's further stated in Judges, and they defeat that city because it evidently was pretty a pretty passive city. They weren't really a bunch of fighters, difficult to do that with. And so Dan ends up relocating up to the very north in a small area, and they're one of the smallest tribes. And then when we get to the end of chapter 19, who finally receives his inheritance? Joshua. Joshua has patiently dealt with all these issues. I say patiently, we don't know how he reacted all the time. He was frustrated, I'm sure. But now he gets his inheritance. Joshua, the son of Nun, and they gave him the city he asked for, Timnath-Serah, in the mountains of Ephraim, because he was of the tribe of Ephraim. So you sort of tie that in. He was of the tribe of Ephraim. Here's Ephraim and Manasseh who come back to him and say, you hadn't given us enough land. So they probably were playing too on the fact that he was one of them. So now he has his inheritance that he was promised way back when he was a spy and came back with a good report along with Caleb. All right. The second bell's about to ring. We got to the end of this section. If you'll be here next week, we have questions for week 12 in the back. Make sure and pick those up to help us along. And I would say we'd ask for questions, but the buzzer just rang. Thank you for your attention.